Good morning. Good morning. Thank you all for being here to learn more about the work of the Environment Committee and Sierra Club and how we can all take part in caring for God's creation. As is often the case, I have the privilege of praying us into this gathering today. So God be with you. Let us pray. God, all creation, we give you thanks for all of the creatures of the earth, from the smallest to the biggest. We give you thanks for each gift we receive from the earth, bountiful harvests that make their way to our tables, and for all the hands that help in that process. We ask for the wisdom and guidance and discernment to care for your creation as sacred. You have offered us this tremendous gift. May we see it and treat it as such. In God's holy name we pray. Amen. In the name of prayer, I do have some little booklets that I made as part of a prayer hike. You'll hear more about the upcoming prayer hike in a moment. But if you would like a little booklet that focuses on the 7 days of creation and a prayer for each of them, I have them and be happy to share. There's not enough for everyone, but if you would like one, I'd be happy to make some more or send you the digital file. So I'll come through with those as I pass it over to Karen.
All right. Thank you, Adeline, and thank you, everyone, for coming. Can you hear me okay? Yes. Oh, what? Get closer to the mic, says Reed. Okay. Well, welcome, and in happy season of creation, and thank you to Adeline for reserving a time for the Environment Committee for this forum time slot. Oops, I just lost my slide, Jamal. Where did it go? Okay, there it is. I'm Karen Abrams. I chair the Environment Committee. I've been doing that for the last couple of years, taking over from some very, very capable people who are in the audience. Chris Moore led it previously with Reed, and Cynthia is here as well. We're a committee that came together in 2001, a small group of parishioners, to live God's love through creation care at home, in community, and at church, guided by our faith and St. Columba's strategic objectives. We have three objectives. One is to understand how faith calls us to be stewards of God's creation. Two, encourage the church and our fellow parishioners to lighten our footprint on the earth. And three, take direct action to addressing pressing environmental challenges in our larger community. And one of those challenges is climate change, and you're gonna hear about that. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about what we're doing with the Environment Committee, what we've been focusing on in 2025, and then I'm going to turn it over to our guest speaker, Mark Rotifer, who's gonna talk about our next sort of push on the advocacy front. All right, next slide. All right, what have we been doing in 2025? Well, I told you a lot of it has to do with climate. So first up is solar panels. I don't know if you realize this, but St. Columba's did a very great thing in 2025, which was to expand our solar panel array from 56 to 145 and triple our solar power generation. We did it at no cost to St. Columba's, and we are saving on our utility bills and reducing our carbon footprint. The panels were originally put in place in 2015, 2016, with much support from the Environment Committee, and I'm really happy that St. Columba's continues to be committed to solar power and renewable energy generation. And if you see Aaron, he was a big force behind getting this upgrade to our panels. Give him a pat on the back and tell him thank you. If you are part of the stewardship committee, those solar panels and the tweaking that Aaron does routinely to optimize thermostats is saving St. Columbus about $100,000 a year. That is money that we can put into programming, staff, and clergy that we'd otherwise be sending to Pepco. So those panels are generating about 80% of the electricity that we use at St. Columbus. The other remaining portion we purchase from Pepco, but we purchase it, it's all renewably sourced electricity. It is not from coal-fired power plants. So we are basically zero emissions when it comes to our electricity. So that is really, really good news. We do still have some heat that's gas generated, but we are making very, very measurable progress towards zero emissions. Another thing that we did this year and we've done in years past is host the annual Mother's Day plant sale. If you see Henry Beal, give him a pat on the back. Henry Beal pretty much single-handedly raises all the plants that get sold at the Mother's Day plant sale. All of you get a pat on the back for buying plants because that has generated about $1,500 or so dollars a year, which we give directly to Sustainable Villages Honduras, which is an NGO that was created by St. Mark's over in Capitol Hill. And every dollar that we generate goes directly to communities in Honduras who are living very much on the edge and going into programs to strengthen their resiliency. These are communities who are very vulnerable to the effects of climate change. And so be assured that your money is being well spent. And that is a big effort. And the Environment Committee supports Henry Beal and the church on that. And many of you here have volunteered for that, so thank you. Another project to highlight is what Alan was talking about, which are our faith hikes, which we started in 2025. We've done three so far. We do them quarterly. The last one was at the Bishop's Garden, which was the picture at the very first slide. And we really do it as a way to just experience the outdoors as a sacred place. They are not that long. They haven't been that long. They aren't that difficult. Our next one will be November 15. We're still figuring out the location. We advertise them in the e-news and in the bulletin, so keep your eyes open for that. We'd love for you to come. We just walk and we stop two or three times and reflect on where we are, pray, and do a little contemplation and do it in community with each other. So if that appeals to you, I really encourage you to join us November 15. Another project we continue to do is the waste and recycle and compost bins. Those bins that you see out in the main area, that whole effort was really championed by Thelma Trish, a longtime member of the environment community. And St. Columbus, as an institution, has adopted that and taken that on. It used to be that all of our paper programs were just tossed. Now they all get recycled. We compost all the food waste from our Wednesday night dinners and water ministry. All of that is taking waste out of the landfill stream and reducing, again, our carbon footprint. So yay, St. Columbus. Last thing that we've been pretty active with in 2025 that I want to mention is around advocacy. Our primary advocacy work has been through our partnership with the Washington Interfaith Network. St. Columbus has a very active the WIN core team led by Elizabeth Vaden. Their focus has been primarily affordable housing. The Environment Committee is now adding on to that with an energy efficiency component as part of the Washington Interfaith Network, which also partners with the Sierra Club, which is where Mark is from. The three areas that we've been focusing on is the Healthy Homes Act, which was passed in 2024, that provides funding to a maximum of 30,000 low to middle income households to upgrade and replace their old gas-powered appliances with energy-efficient appliances to reduce their utility bills and improve their home indoor air quality, which is a big deal. And St. Columba's backed that. Ledley signed a letter and supported that effort, and that passed. Unfortunately, the funding to implement that has been placed at risk. The 2026 DC budget, the mayor decided to raid the funding to implement healthy homes and other renewable energy projects to pay for DC government's own utility and waste removal fees. So that's a problem. And Mark is going to talk to us about the next phase in the advocacy effort to create an alternative funding stream so we can continue the work that was initiated by the passage of the Healthy Homes Act. Another advocacy piece that we're working on is the bottle bill, and I'm looking at Reed because Reed has been really our point person on that. That's through the Episcopal Diocese of Washington and a number of other partners. I will be testifying on Wednesday at DC Council with lots of help from Reed. And it is a bill to basically reduce bottle trash, so plastic and aluminum trash, to create a 10-cent fee and a method to recover those bottles, which has been proven in other jurisdictions to be much more effective than conventional recycling programs. So this is something we really want to support, something that Wynn is also taking on as well. And we'd love you to be aware of that. So it's not going to be an easy fight. There's a number of parties opposed to that. So last slide, how can you get involved? First of all, I just want to say I am personally really, really proud to be part of a church that takes this stuff so seriously, and I was really excited that we got some time to talk about it, because a lot of this work is kind of going on in the background. The solar panels are not doing a big song and dance. They're just quietly working away for us, and I don't know how many people actually realize that, but we're doing a lot, and I'm really proud to be part of a church that puts its money where its mouth is and is really actively looking to make a difference in its climate impact, and you can be part of that too. The first thing I would really encourage you to do is, we've got a couple things. We've got a sign-up sheet Reed's got right here. If you'd like, if you're not already on our sign-up sheet, go see Reed, raise your hand, Reed. We also would really like you to sign up to get your home tested. We are starting a new citizen campaign with Sierra Club and Wynn to get home heating systems tested as part of the next phase of the campaign to measure noxious gases that are generated from gas-powered heating systems. You can use the QR code. I'd really love to get at least 25 St. Columbans sign up. We are in competition with the Quakers. Just saying. Okay, so the Friends Meeting of Washington, we're in a friendly competition. I'd love to show them how committed we are to this. It's easy to do. Use the QR code. Get yourself signed up. We're doing sign-ups in October, and then we'll have trained testers come to your home and do the testing. I'm one of the trained testers. I'm friendly. I'm nice. So please do that. Come to the community conversation scheduled on Wednesday, October 8th, where we will be the Washington Interfaith Core Team. Elizabeth Vane's group will be talking about all of the Wynn advocacy work and advocacy work in general that we do, and you can be part of that. Come to the next faith hike, and come to our next committee meeting on December 7th. We hope to be hearing from Sustainable Villages Honduras, so it should be a good, robust meeting. So I have let's see. So we got the sign-up sheet, and then Chris, if you could please pass out. Chris also has flyers with the sign-up for the heating volunteer program. And now let's hear from Mark, who's going to tell us about our next phase of advocacy. Mark wears many, many hats. He is an advocate for energy efficiency and renewable energy and transitioning off of fossil fuels. He's been a writer and producer and editor at multiple news outlets. He is currently the press secretary for the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, and he is the political chair of the Sierra Club DC chapter. So thank you very much, and we'll have time for questions at the end. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Karen. And good morning, everyone. As Karen said, my name is Mark Rotifer. She mentioned my employer. I'm actually not here in that capacity. I'm here in my Sierra Club capacity. I've been a volunteer with the Sierra Club for about a decade. And in 2018, the DC Council passed a law that requires DC to transition to 100% clean energy by 2032. I'm sorry, I misspoke. Not 100% clean energy. Electricity from 100% renewable sources by 2032. We're about halfway there now. It ramps up a little bit each year. So after that was passed, you know, it was a major bill in 2018. In 2019, we said, okay, what do we want to do next on clean energy? And we decided to focus on methane gas, which the industry calls natural gas because it sounds better, which is why we don't call it natural gas. And we said, we want to do something about it. Now, what is the reason for that? The Department of Energy and Environment puts together an inventory of DC's greenhouse gas emissions. Most states' transportation is really high. Here in DC, we're small, we have a lot of transit. We have transportation emissions, but buildings are actually over half of our climate pollution. And methane gas is about 25% of that. This is gas that is, piped into your home and other buildings for your furnace, for your hot water heater, or for a stove or dryer. All of those have electric alternatives, but, you know, some people like using gas, especially when it comes to cooking. But, you know, in addition to the climate threat that I mentioned from methane gas, it's also really bad when you breathe it in. It is a pollutant that puts out NO2 and other things that are bad for us and that are linked to diseases like hypertension, heart disease. You know, if you have a respiratory condition like asthma or COPD, it makes it much worse. So, for health and climate reasons, we want to transition off of gas. I mentioned the Sierra Club started doing this in 2019. It started out, it was just two guys, me and somebody else, and we started this committee and we started meeting regularly. And then in 2020, we reached out to Washington Interfaith Network, which Karen mentioned, and WIN, as they call themselves. It's a really great group. It's been a transformational partnership. I'm so glad that we're working with WIN and that we have been for the last 5 years. So the very first piece of legislation we worked on was legislation saying that newly constructed buildings in DC cannot burn fossil fuels. The reason is, you know, it can be difficult and expensive to retrofit an existing building off of fossil fuels. For a brand new building, it's not difficult or expensive at all. You install a heat pump, which is basically a two-way air conditioner. When I say two-way, you know, the heat pump provides cooling. And the same technology, you run it in reverse and you get heat. And so we don't want to do electric resistance heating like the baseboard stuff because that uses a lot of electricity. Your bills will be really high. But heat pumps are like 300 to 400% efficient, meaning that for every unit of energy they use, they can put out 3 or 4 units of heat, whereas the electric resistance is about 100%. So, you know, if you're using 3 or 4 times more energy, you're paying 3 or 4 more times an electric bill. So that's a serious problem. So anyway, the bill said newly constructed buildings will be all electric from the start. because it's easy, it's cheap, you don't have two systems, right? Most buildings now, you have a gas system for heating and you have the air conditioning for cooling. When you have a heat pump, you have one system that provides both. A heat pump is more expensive than an air conditioner, but it's cheaper than an air conditioner and a gas system together. So that's new buildings, right? And we thought, you know, if you're in a hole, what's the first thing to do is to stop digging. So that's why we said, okay, we're gonna do new buildings. And that law passed in 2022. And the next thing we worked on was the Healthy Homes Act, which Karen mentioned. We worked really closely with Wynn on the Healthy Homes Act. And as Karen says, that law, it's a law now, says that 30,000 low and moderate income homes can get no cost electrification and energy efficiency upgrades. So in addition to heat pumps that I mentioned, there's also energy efficiency stuff. This is things like insulation, air sealing, things like that, because, you know, we want to make sure that bills are going down. So we need to combine the two. And as I said, I mean, Wynn was just such an amazing partner in this. I do not think the law would have passed if it were not for what Wynn was doing. Now, there is a problem with the Healthy Homes Act, though. The problem is that these retrofits aren't cheap. Like I was saying, it's easy to do it in a new building. It's not easy to do it in an existing building. Well, I mean, it obviously depends on the conditions of the buildings. But so we said, okay, we don't want low and moderate income people stuck on the gas system. There's two reasons for that. The first reason is something called Project Pipes, which Washington Gas is now calling District Safe. It's a pipeline replacement project. So they want to replace almost every gas pipe in DC. The projections are that this could cost nearly $15 billion. That will be paid by people who have gas in their house or other buildings, by the ratepayers. They're going to pay for it. Now, we're fighting Project Pipes with our utility regulator, but, you know, we've had some success, but less than we would like. So gas is going to get really expensive if they're allowed to do this. And we don't want low and moderate income people on it. The second problem is that as people are transitioning off the gas system, right? So if you have fewer people on it, but you still have these pipes everywhere, they still take the gas from, you know, wherever it starts out and into your home. But if you reduce the number of people who are on the gas system, that means the cost per person increases. So then they'll go up even more. This is what we call gas system costs. Not necessarily the cost of the gas itself, but just the cost to operate the system. So the more people you have, the fewer people you have on it, the more expensive it's going to be. So we want to get low and moderate income households off. And the Healthy Homes Act is designed to give them these retrofits at no cost because they can be expensive. The problem, I said there was a problem, but I forgot to get into the problem. The problem is with Healthy Homes is money. It's expensive. And as Karen mentioned, well, she didn't get into this, but she mentioned the mayor rates it. There is a fee on utility bills called the Sustainable Energy Trust Fund. It is supposed to fund efficiency and electrification measures. I think it's been around since about 2010, 2011, something like that. As Karen mentioned, the mayor routinely raids that fund in her budget proposal and takes the money and uses it for other things. The DC Council tries to put the money back, and every year they put a little bit back, but they have not put back everything that she has taken out because it's really hard to do. She does it in this she uses this complicated gimmick that I'm not going to get into that is hard to undo. And, you know, because we have to have a balanced budget here in DC, you know, when you try to change her budget, you need to take money out of something else or you have to raise taxes. And, you know, they don't really want to do either one of those things. So the funding is a problem. So we have what we think is a solution to it, and it's called Clean Heat. It is modeled after our system for solar in DC. As she mentioned, you guys saving $100,000 a year. We have this system for solar. There are these things called solar renewable energy credits, SRECs, and St. Columbus and everybody else with solar in DC sells these to Pepco, and there's a marketplace where Pepco has to buy these, and it's supply and demand, right? Their value depends on how much there is. The more of it, the less valuable there are. There is a price cap where Pepco can just not buy the solar credits and pay this essentially a fine instead, and so the cost will never go above the fine, because if you could pay a fine for $50 or buy something for $55 and not pay the fine, right? Just pay the fine. So there's a price ceiling. But anyway, so that's the way our solar system works. I say to everybody in DC, if you have a roof in DC and you don't have solar on it, you are throwing money away. Really, you should do it, because these subsidies are pretty generous for solar, and you get free electricity as well. So what we want to do is set something like that up for clean heat. And the idea is then the money, right, the same way we're subsidizing solar, the money in this case would go to electrification and energy efficiency. So this would help homeowners, renters, houses of worship, businesses, any other building in DC transition from off of fossil fuels for their building heat. The way it works, just like our system with solar, is that the same way I said Pepco has to buy these credits for solar, we would make providers of fossil fuels for building heat would also have to buy these clean heat credits to cover a certain percentage of their sales. Now, that's overwhelmingly Washington Gas, but it would include fuel oil and propane. We don't have a lot of that in DC. That's more in rural areas, but we have some. So it would include them as well. It would cover a small portion of their sales, and it would gradually rise, the same system that we have for solar. So the idea is we are gradually transitioning heating from dirty sources to clean, renewable, efficient sources. That's why we call it clean heat. And the money, what the credits would go for, is the installation of heat pumps and for efficiency measures. So a contractor, you know, they install a heat pump in your home. They can say, okay, I did this heat pump, and they can sell that credit to these people. So you're subsidizing putting the heat pump in your house. You're making it cheaper to do, because as I mentioned, it's expensive. So that's our plan for clean heat. We have draft legislation. It has not been introduced yet. We are trying to convince Charles Allen, who's a member of the DC Council representing Ward 6, which is like mostly Capitol Hill. We're trying to get him to introduce it. He's the chairman of the Transportation and Environment Committee of the DC Council, so this is his realm. And we have a meeting with Councilmember Allen 3 weeks from yesterday. That's October 18th. It's at 10 a.m. at St. Mark's Episcopal Church on Capitol Hill. It's 301 A Street Southeast. And, you know, I wish I had brought a QR code, because we have a sign-up link. Karen, maybe I'll try to email it to you, and you can email it to the group. But if you're available 3 weeks from yesterday, October 18th, it would be great if you came. Washington Interfaith Network is sponsoring it. They call it an accountability session. They have their people, you know, speak and talk about this issue and talk about the importance of transitioning off fossil fuels, and especially making sure low and moderate income households aren't left behind. And then we're going to say to Charles Allen, okay, will you introduce this bill? We've had, you know, preliminary conversations about it with him, and he said, yeah, it looks good. I have some questions. Got to figure some stuff out. But the aim of that meeting is to try to get him to introduce this clean heat legislation that I described. So I really hope you can make it there, and hopefully Karen can follow up via email with the registration link, or honestly, you could just show up at St. Mark's Episcopal Church, 10 a.m. October 18th. That's my pitch on clean heat.
Is it still on? Okay, great. Thank you very much, Mark. I'm going to try to get this. I don't know. I can't get that to come back on. That's okay. Oh, there it is. Oh, but not there, maybe. Anyway, we have time for some questions. If anybody has questions, we've got the mic right up there, or we can take some questions right now. I see one hand here.
Mark, I have a question. Our building is an old building. It's Friendship Terrace. It's right across the street from the church. And we are on electricity. We're not on gas. So, and we've tried to get solar, but there's been a problem with that. I don't know what exactly the problem is, but my question is, if you have an older building that does have electricity all the way through with the appliances, should you still get the solar?
Yeah, I mean, you should get solar in any case. I mean, you saw this church is saving $100,000 a year. So yeah, I mean, whether you have gas or not, you should definitely get solar in DC. Oh, sure. Reed asked me to say something about the bottle bill. There's legislation in the DC Council. There's a hearing on Wednesday. Karen mentioned it. It would require a 10-cent deposit when you buy a beverage can or bottle. Then you get the 10 cents back. You redeem it. You put it in what they call a reverse vending machine. You get 10 cents back. Essentially, this stops people from throwing the stuff on the ground. We've got a lot of bottles in our river, plastic bottles. You know, they take like, I don't know, 5,000 years or something to degrade. This would make them valuable, so people pick them up. There's a hearing on October 1st, Wednesday, at the DC Council. I think you can sign up for it. Monday at 5 p.m.? Okay, yeah. So even though I focus on energy issues, not waste, I'm going to be there because the American Beverage Association is going all out against this. They've got a lot more money than we do. You know, they've hired consultants and all kinds of stuff. We'll never beat them on money, but we want to, you know, beat them with our people, right? I mean, one of the things the Sierra Club says is we are organized people and our opponents are generally organized money. And that's certainly the case here. And it's important, you know, and I was writing my testimony yesterday and I saw that it said in Michigan, which has one, I think it was like 74% of bottles are returned, and in Maine it's 77%. So, you know, imagine if we could get 77% of the bottles in the Anacostia River out. That would be good. I've done cleanups on the Anacostia River and the number of bottles is far and away the number one source of trash in the Anacostia River.
Quick question. For those of us who can't have solar panels on our roofs, we tried several years ago and we had engineers come in and look, and we just got too many trees. It doesn't work for us. So we were looking at alternatives, and we now buy into a thing called, we get our energy from a solar farm, which seems to be a good alternative if you can't have panels on your roof, and I just think it would be good if there was some clarity, because I think there are a lot of confusing things out there. People, you know, offer clean energy, clean choice, or wind power, and then they charge you a fortune for it. And I was stuck in one of those for a while. But this solar panel farm that where we now get our solar energy from seems to be a good alternative, and I don't know whether, you know, again, I'm not absolutely 100% sure that that's a good thing or the best thing, but I just wondered if you had any advice about alternatives.
I don't know a ton about that, to be honest with you, but yeah, you can, you know, you don't have to buy your electricity from Pepco. You have to get it through their wires because they own the wires, but you can buy your electricity from anybody, and there are some businesses where they say we're 100% wind or 100% solar or 100% some combination, and you can buy it that way. I know there has been a problem. Sometimes it's been predatory, not necessarily with wind and solar, but like people going in saying, oh, we'll give you really low electricity bills, and then it ends up being a ripoff. This has been a problem in some low-income communities. So I can't really speak to your situation, but as I said, our electricity is moving to 100% renewable sources, even if you buy it from Pepco. We're about 50% right now.
We can talk about that.
Yeah, it's called community solar, and here in D.C., the leading purveyor of it is called Neighborhood Sun. And you just sign up for your power from them, and everything that you were getting from Pepco comes through theirs. Mine, personally, was they had a landfill in, I think, PG County that they covered with solar panels, and all the power that goes into the system, I get a credit from Pepco every month. My Pepco bill is negative. I'm paying Neighborhood Sun, but I get credit all the way along. So if you can't do solar on your own house, community solar is the concept, and Neighborhood Sun is the local provider. And since I grabbed the mic already anyway, I just thought, you know, here we are at St. Columba's, and Mark is giving us all the good advocacy pitch, but why do we care as St. Columba's? I remember, in fact, Sally Bingham, who's an Episcopal priest who started Interfaith Power and Light in California, she said to me, remember, Reed, you're not just the Sierra Club at prayer. There is something more that is drawing us to this from our faith perspective. And so you think about the bottle bill, that might seem like a nothing burger, but Jeff and Chris Moore and I went down part of Ward 8 Woods Conservancy. We spent a morning filling trash bags with everything. Jeff's still broken down from carrying tires out of a gully, but it felt to us like reparations, like we were part of the system that made this mess, and now can we help to clean it up? So that's where the faith perspective comes for me. It's love God, love your neighbor. And if people have gas stoves in their apartments that are giving their kids asthma because of the nitrous oxides that are coming off the stove, even when the stove is not operating, that's something we need to do something about. And I'm so glad to have Wynn now be a partner on that and bring that anti-poverty advocacy together with the faith advocacy. And I think that's what's exciting about this, is how we're all beginning to work together. Do you want to add to that?
Sure. No, thank you, Reed, for addressing the solar question. We have a few more flyers if you want to sign up to get your home tested. Go ahead and do that. I have a question for you, Mark, if there aren't any other questions in the room. Anyone else have a question? Oh, go ahead.
Karen, going back to St. Columba's, we have a rather large capital improvement project coming. I'm curious, I'm assuming that the Environment Committee has a seat at that table. I was curious what form that takes.
Yes, we do have a seat at the table. We coordinate with Aaron regularly. The big focus right now is on the renovations to the bathrooms and the kitchens. At least that's where we're most plugged in. And the space, there's probably more going on, but that's where we're plugged in. No pun intended. The area of focus for us has been around the upgrades to the kitchen in particular, which has a very large commercial grade gas powered stove and oven. And we're actively engaging with Aaron to see if what the options are to try to go to electric on that, with a combination of conventional electric and maybe some induction. So those are active spaces of conversation right now that are going really well. How it all shakes out in the end, TBD, but we're actively working in that direction with Aaron. Great question. Any other questions? Oh, yes, and I should point out Hillary Raining, Reverend Hillary Raining is here. Thank you for coming, Hillary, our new, brand new rector. So thank you. Yes. So a question I have for you, Mark, is can you talk a little bit about what it takes to do this advocacy work? When you passed when the Healthy Homes Act got passed, you did mention about how partnering with Wynn was a game changer, but what's involved and how long did it take?
It probably took about 2 years, and this could probably take something like that. But what we need, I mentioned organized money versus organized power, and we're like never gonna win on money, is we need people. I mean, that's why I'm here today. We had a similar meeting with Charles Allen. This was during the pandemic, so it was over Zoom, not in person, that we organized with Wynn to try to convince him to introduce the bill. And we had almost 100 people on this Zoom, and it was a very diverse group. which was really helpful. And he noted that, you know, because environmentalists are known for being mostly white people, and it's true. It's a problem that we need to deal with. But he said, wow, you guys have this really diverse, strong, big group of people asking me to do this, and I think that's great, and this is something that I haven't seen from you all before. So it takes a lot of people. I mean, that's why I'm inviting you to please join this event in 3 weeks on October 18th at St. Mark's in Capitol Hill, because we want Charles Allen to see a large group of people, right? I mean, he's a politician. They all are. They have their jobs because people vote for them. So if a lot of people are telling them something, they tend to listen. They don't always, of course. But so what it takes is a strong group of people and you know, to have some numbers and to do things like, go to this event on Saturday with Charles Allen, when there's a hearing on the legislation, to testify, to call your council members and email your council members and ask them to do it. Most of you, probably your ward person is Matt Fruman. You know, he's pretty good on our issues, but, you know, you still have to push him. Charles Allen's really good on these issues too, but, you know, we're having this whole meeting to try to push him to introduce this legislation. And, you know, I'm a volunteer with the Sierra Club. I'm very involved. But the great thing is, I think, when you're a volunteer, you can engage at whatever level you want, right? You can do something once a month or even less, or, you know, you can work on it almost every day like I do. You can be anywhere anywhere in between. So so that's what it'll take. We need a lot of people, and we need them telling the DC Council, this is important, I care about this, you know, you should take this action.
Great. Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you all very much for coming. The Environment Committee will be very much engaged with the Washington Interfaith Network on the Clean Heat campaign. We will let you know about all the upcoming opportunities to plug in, like Mark said, at a low level or a high level. It's your choice, but it does, many hands make light work, and it takes a village, and there's a lot of work to be done, and we do it better together in community. And it is, as Reed said, for me and for Reed and for many of us, a real display of how we show God's love in our community, how we love our neighbor as ourselves. And that's what brings us to the table really every day. So thank you all for coming, and look forward to chatting with any of you afterwards. If you have any questions, we'll be in the common area. Thank you.